Hospitals Rethink Hospitals.
When I started, a family staying in the intensive care unit, that was unheard of. And whereas right now, that's the norm. And I think that's positive for the kid to look up and be around a familiar, see a familiar face. Because I always tell people, can you imagine if you were sick and you never saw a familiar face? That'd be awful.
Some pretty basic questions of design are transforming the layout of hospitals from the operating rooms to the waiting rooms. When comfort equals better care, even a private room is doctor's orders. The architecture of healthcare on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, May 19th. I'm John Hockenberry, joined by The Takeaway's own Andrea Bernstein. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, John. Coming up this hour, you know the color of money, but maybe you should think about its gender.
Uh-oh.
Some psychologists say women's brains can make them superior investors.
I have a bad feeling about
this. We'll talk to one. A brain, that is. Plus, the latest news on housing might be good. We'll explain all this and more ahead, but first these headlines.
And in the headlines, the car you drive may not meet strict new environmental standards coming today. President Obama is set to announce national emissions limits and a 35.5-mile-a-gallon fuel standard. These come into force gradually from now until 2016. This will drive up the price of new cars, but drivers may recoup some of that money through savings on gas. The rules apply to new cars, so they won't force you to do anything about your current ride. We'll tell you more about what this means in just a moment. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu meets with U.S. lawmakers today after his meeting yesterday with President Obama. Netanyahu didn't go as far as endorsing a Palestinian state, but he did say he's ready to resume peace talks with Palestinian leaders.
There'll have to be compromises by Israelis and Palestinians alike. We're ready to do our share. We hope the Palestinians will do their share as well.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas visits the White House later this month. Andrea?
We'll get fresh numbers on the housing trends we just mentioned later this morning. The latest data on new home construction is due out, and analysts predict a healthy jump. Speaking of numbers, 32 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a surprising figure from forecasters from Ohio to New England. Freeze warnings are in effect all over the country, even though it's mid-May. High pressure means the ground heat isn't sticking around, so watch for record cold temperatures in several states. And it's not me, it's you. That's NASA's breakup message to the Hubble Space Telescope. This week's repair job is the last time any astronaut will visit. Project manager Preston Birch says he's sad to see it end.
We've gotten almost 20 years of service out of it, and it'll be cranking along there for another 5 years. Maybe it is time to move on.
NASA's not coming back to visit, but the Hubble will spend the next few years in denial. It'll keep sending high-quality images to Earth, maybe even believing a handsome spacewalker will stop by.
For heaven's sakes.
Then NASA will send a space robot to hurl Hubble into a watery grave in the Pacific.
Typic West Coast romance. Ouch. S&P gained 3% yesterday, while the Dow did nearly as well. The Dow begins trading at 8504. We're talking about hospitals and how to redesign them. Some are making private rooms the norm as a medical decision. Tell us, when you or your loved ones have been in a hospital, what would you have changed to make the stay much easier? Better food, private rooms, more visiting hours, actually staying in the hospital with your loved one. 877-8-MY-TAKE or your story at mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Andrea Bernstein. The Obama administration is announcing new national standards for car emissions today. Cars and light trucks will have to get 35 miles an hour by 2016. The current standards are 27.5 miles per gallon for cars and 24 for light trucks. Auto manufacturers are not expected to challenge the new rules.
Because they're all bankrupt.
They're so beaten down. With us to talk about whether these new standards are a good idea are Lisa Marganelli, author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank, and Robert Farrago, publisher of the blog The Truth About Cars. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Lisa, you think these new standards are going to work?
I do. I think it's a good move. I think we basically have to do it. We don't have much choice. And a third increase in fuel economy will go a ways towards getting us where we need to go. I mean, my biggest hope, actually, is that, you know, these are average standards, so there's going to be a cutting edge that's way ahead of 35 miles per gallon.
It seems so little, 35 miles per gallon, up from 27. Am I missing something there? I mean, we're talking about something 7 years from now that's less than a mile a gallon improved efficiency per year. It doesn't seem that ambitious.
Well, what's good about it, I think, is that it combines the truck and the car standard. And what we've had for many years is that we have a separate standard for so-called light trucks, which include SUVs and even things like the PT Cruiser, which was really a car disguised as a truck, so it didn't have to meet cars' MPG standards.
Well, all
so
SUVs
once
like
we combine the two and
truck.
We push those old trucks up into that 35 mile per gallon area,
all right,
area, that's
Robert, should we have a smiley face on your coffee cup this morning or a grumpy face?
Please put a smiley face there to counteract my grumpiness. CAFE doesn't work. It hasn't worked. It'll never work. There are too many loopholes now. There'll be just as many loopholes in the future. The only way to get Americans to use less gas is the way that's been proven, and that's to raise gas prices. It's not politically palatable, but it is the only effective way to limit the use of gas in this country. That's it. That's the answer, and the politicians have to grasp that nettle if they want to achieve that result. Otherwise, it's all window dressing.
Well, then, Lisa, that means this counteracts the demand issue. I mean, if we're talking about simply new cars meeting these standards and the rest of the fleet maintains its sort of lower mile per gallon, what's the impact, the aggregate impact between now and 2016 on demand for fuel in the transportation sector, Lisa?
Not a huge amount. I mean, I did a calculation that if you increase the fuel efficiency of 6 million cars that are on the road out of the I don't know, what have we got? We've got millions and millions of cars on the road, over 100 million. If you reduce the, you know, as you start to phase out, every 6 million cars increasing their fuel efficiency by a third is about 1% of gas demand. It's a pretty slow route. The thing is, it takes 15 years to get a car off the road. And I guess my counter to Robert is, so how high does gas have to get for people to really curtail how much they're driving? I mean,
well, we saw it a year ago.
425 last year.
Yeah, 425, and things started to go down. Yeah.
And all we did was we got a recession. I think actually recessions are a great way to get people to drive less.
But hang on a second, because statistically, even before the economy tanked, people were driving less and less and less and less with the gas prices. And Robert, I'm wondering.
Actually, you can double the price of gas and people pull back their driving by about 5%.
Yeah, well, hold on, though. The important thing here is new vehicles, if we're talking about CAFE. And when the gas prices spiked, Americans left their SUVs and went into smaller vehicles, more fuel-efficient vehicles. That's a trend which is actually still continuing today.
Uh-huh.
It's still effective now. SUV sales are in the tank even more than car sales because of that gas spike. That's the only way to achieve this goal with any kind of efficiency. 1% is nothing. Well, 1% reduction in gas consumption, it's laughable.
Yeah, but
if you want to actually create this change, raise the gas price.
I will say that between 1975 and 1985, we used fuel efficiency standards in CAFE to double the fuel efficiency of our fleet. We dropped our gasoline consumption between that and the high prices. We dropped by a third, and that basically was what gave us the low gas prices that
false
made us back off
CAFE
for the entire 80s
and 90s.
Hang on,
you two. Question for you both. Robert, starting with you. Are you so convinced that last year's experience, where gas went to $5 a gallon in some areas of the country, wasn't so emotionally scarring that Americans didn't permanently change their habits? Are you absolutely convinced that if there was no economic recession right now, that there would be no problem with the driving and people would be just driving like they were, you know, a year or 2 years ago?
Supply and demand is what we're talking about here. If people are paying more, if there's less, if it's harder for them to get that supply, they will drive less and they will pick vehicles that get them more value for the money. This is what they did. any kind of increase in fuel efficiency in vehicles in this country was not caused by the federal government. It was caused by the rising prices of gas. And that's a fact. You can't sit, you can talk about CAFE's effects on American society, but when you get right down to it, look at last year. It accomplished in 4 weeks. It accomplished what legislation had tried to do since 1978.
All right. Well,
four weeks versus 15 plus years.
Robert and Lisa, let's step back for a second. It seems to me when Barack Obama announces these standards later on today, he announces them in an environment that is radically different. If we're talking about the car industry. Lisa, is it the case that these kinds of standards are easier to enforce in an environment where at least two of the domestic manufacturers are bankrupt and the third may go bankrupt or at least is shrinking, and that in a smaller manufacturing environment you can change these standards, but you end up bringing in more imports into the United States and therefore fewer jobs?
Well, it's going to be hard to see how that shakes out. I mean, if I go buy a Chevy Avio right now, it'll be made in Korea.
A terrible car.
Whereas if I buy a Toyota, it might be made in Tennessee.
So,
it is a terrible car. People aren't buying
them. We no longer know where our cars come from, and I'm not sure how relevant it is, but we certainly can't have our energy policy and our foreign policy dictated by, kind of an auto industry that's just... hates regulation.
Well, but Lisa, isn't that the point? They're not saying a peep about this. I mean, things have changed so radically. I mean, that 5 years ago,
desperate.
That was unimaginable.
But isn't that...
They're desperate. But right. I think one of the things that they're looking for, and one thing they're a little bit happy about, is they're not going to have to deal with 12 different CAFE standards around the country.
Get
because,
national standards.
You know, California had its own. And,
Robert, what are you suggesting? That there be no regulation whatsoever and that the government just throw up its hands and say to the car industry, just do whatever you want? I mean, that hasn't really been a very effective strategy for reducing gas emissions.
There are only so many different ways to say this. If you want to have window dressing, if you want to do something which is politically palatable because it doesn't seem like it's going to hurt the average person's wallet, then by all means create this loophole-ridden system which is ineffective, but it says we're doing something. If you want to do something effective, then you have to look at historical precedent and simple common sense.
Right. I understand what you said, but you haven't answered the question about whether you should just give up and say that it doesn't matter at all, fuel efficiency. Is that what you're saying?
No. You're linking two statements together which are not necessarily linked. You can, if you have a piece of legislation which doesn't work, then what is wrong with abandoning it and putting something in that does work? The income that could be raised by a gas tax could be spent on other projects which are vitally needed. I'm not in favor of higher taxes in general, but if you want to increase fuel economy, reduce foreign imports of oil, then you have to take the path, or you should take the path, which will actually get you there. CAFE
right.
hasn't got us there, and it's not going to get us there. There will be loopholes, and
Lisa,
the automakers will jump
about
right
that?
In.
I mean, do you think it's worth throwing up our hands and saying, doesn't matter how fuel-efficient cars are, if gas doesn't cost more, people are going to keep driving to the limits of their wallets?
That's the
truth. Well, I think there's a couple things going on. One is... Gas, it looks to be like it's going to be very volatile for the next couple of years. And so you need to make sure that people get the message that gas is getting more expensive. Whether or not it's $2 a gallon right now, it's going to be more expensive in the future, and they can't control that. I think that people, Americans, have spent a couple of generations being fairly irrational about cars. When people go into an auto showroom, they're not necessarily thinking about fuel economy. They may be concerned about the amount they're going to spend, but all sorts of things happen when you go into an auto showroom where you get talked into a different car.
All right, and we're going to have to end it there. We'll continue on the takeaway.org this conversation. Lisa Marganelli, fellow at the New America Foundation, author of Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank, and Robert Farrago, publisher of the blog The Truth About Cars. Thanks very much to join us, and we'll hear more about those CAFE standards shortly. Now it's time for the headlines with Femi Oke.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Mm-hmm.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.